This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And this week we're talking about rice cakes.
Woo, 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 woo!
We came up with this idea last week. I just realized, like, I'm making it sound like this was an amazing...
This was a big idea. We had to act on it.
Like, what if we devoted an entire episode to rice cakes? And we're talking about American-style puffed rice cakes.
Yeah, the kind of things that come in a plastic sleeve that are shaped like frozen burger patties.
They totally are. God, I loved frozen burger patties when I was a kid. I'm sure I've talked about this on the show before, and this is not the frozen burger patty episode, but there was a time, like, when I was a teenager and, like, you know, needed to, like, cram large quantities of food into myself at all times. And my mom was like, I got a 20-pack of frozen burger patties from Costco. There's the grill right outside on the patio. When you need a snack, you figure out how to put these things together. And I did. And I would make myself a double cheeseburger as a snack.
Oh, my God. I don't remember ever going through this as a teenage, you know, assigned female at birth person, but I do remember going through this as a pregnant person.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Oh my God, it was so fun. Only my version of it was like an entire, like, you know, a loaf of sandwich bread already sliced,
okay,
and a jar of peanut butter. And it was just endless. I didn't even toast the bread, just, like, smeared peanut butter on slice after slice of bread.
So not rice cakes is what you're saying.
So not rice cakes, but... Hold on, we're going to get back to rice cakes here. Get ready, everybody. This is where the show actually begins. When I was growing up, I remember my mom eating peanut butter on rice cakes. This was like, it was a diet thing.
I ate peanut butter on rice cakes growing up all the time.
Oh my God, really? Because to me, it seemed like something that my mom did because she was on a diet. Like, rice cakes to me say, I have bought into diet culture.
Oh, absolutely. And yet, like they were around. And so, I mean, that definitely, like, infested my house as well. But, you know, the rice cakes are around and they are pretty tasty. Like, are they a substantial snack? Not really.
It's true. They are pretty tasty, like more than you would expect.
Yeah. So I haven't bought these in a while, but I have been snacking on them pretty satisfiedly. That's probably not a word.
Anyway, okay, wait, so let's go down memory lane. I mean, we already just sort of did, but so when you had these as a kid, were they the salted kind? Did they even make the salted kind back then?
Well, I think they were lightly salted. Were
okay.
they? I don't think of them as being unsalted, but I don't know. It's possible.
You know what's always bothered me about rice cakes? It sounds like I'm just shitting on rice cakes, but I do actually enjoy eating them.
No, what's always bothered you about rice cakes? It's time. Like,
well, I really need them to be unbroken. Like, when I take them out of the packaging,
I want the Laura Hillenbrand book.
Is there a book called Unbroken?
I think so.
Anyway, I want them to be whole, and I want them to have enough flat surface to smear peanut butter on. Like, you know how one side is often, like, flatter than the other? The other
one
is, like, it's like the surface of the moon. Oh, God. Okay, great.
So wait, so does that mean you spread the peanut butter on the bottom of the rice cake?
Because
I think of the flat one as being the bottom.
No, I don't think rice cakes have a top or a bottom.
But when they come out of the package, like the moon crater side is always on top.
Well, I don't care which one's on top when they come out of the package.
I think maybe I lied because, okay, we're going to be opening some rice cake packages here. At least I am.
Let's get down to, like, what are rice cakes? Because you've implied that, like, maybe in their production, there's a top and a bottom?
Yeah, there is. So rice cakes are literally, so we this grew out of the, this is a spinoff episode of the Puffed Snacks, aka Pop Chips episode that we did last week. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
And we learned on that that Pop Chips were invented when some business guy bought a rice cake factory and like put potatoes in the machines to see what would happen. Something like that. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, even if not, let's just pretend that's what
I've already blanked out on what happened last week.
There was a lot of crunching, and there's going to be a lot of crunching again this week.
Mm-hmm. Possibly more.
Possibly more. So the way they're made is you soak some rice, you put it into like a round metal depression, you go to YouTube and look up, you know, how are rice cakes
made.
A round
metal depression? Is it like a crater?
It's like a crater.
Or is it a cylinder?
It's a cylinder. but like a, you know, like a tuna can shaped cylinder kind of.
Okay, I wouldn't call that a depression. Yeah. I would call that a
divot?
A divot. I was looking for divot, but a divot implies
something that happened like unfortunately, right?
Yeah, like a little chunk of grass that's been pulled up.
Yeah,
let's,
like when
we, let's
when you and I go
divots.
Golfing as we've been doing throughout the pandemic. you know, you swing your niblick or whatever, and you like hit a divot.
Did you say niblick?
I think that's a golf thing. I don't know.
If it is really, I
yeah,
would be
I think,
so excited.
I think niblick is really a golf thing.
Oh my God. Okay, wait, but hold on. A round metal depression. I'm
right,
still
so
gonna...
you put soaked rice in there. Like so, and there's a bunch of them. It's like they're made by big industrial machines, okay?
Okay.
So you've got like a little like tuna can shaped depression like in like a metal mold.
Whenever I go through a depression, it is totally tuna can shaped.
Yep. Just popping one can of tuna after another.
Okay, go on.
You put soaked rice in there, then a heated cylinder is placed on top to pressurize it. And then it's heated under high pressure and then suddenly depressurized, which causes the rice to pop and, quote, interweave. And there are no, like, added ingredients holding the rice grains together. I thought there was going to be, like, a syrup or a, you know, industrial adhesive or something. But it's just, like, the molecules of the rice grains literally intertwine when it puffs.
Oh, that's actually really interesting.
And you can see this in many YouTube videos.
Oh, okay. I love the phrase pop and interweave. It seems like this is like the next step from pop and lock.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, popping and locking, that new dance craze that the kids just came up with. Yes, now they're popping and interweaving. So to pop and interweave, you like put a bunch of kids into a mosh pit.
Okay.
Right? And
okay.
Then you like suddenly reduce the pressure and they become permanently bonded together.
Oh, man. I can't wait till post-pandemic time so I can go pop and interweave at a
show.
Me
too. Oh, God. I've been so missing out on the casual popping and interweaving.
Do you remember casual interweaving? God,
yeah.
It was so dangerous and so fun.
I know. Okay, so rice cakes can be made with white or brown rice, and I said we were going to try both, or at least I was, but then when I looked, I realized that both of the plain rice cakes I bought were made with brown rice. So I think that may be, like, the standard.
Okay, interesting.
And I also, like, in one of the videos I watched, it showed them being, like, sprayed with a syrup to give them a sheen, which I think does happen for some, like, sweetened rice cakes, but the plain ones are not sprayed with syrup. They're literally just made with brown rice and salt.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay. I mean, this is a really fascinating industrial product. Like,
yeah, and there also are videos about, like, you can make rice cakes at home, but, like, you won't.
No. Why would I bother?
You have to, I mean, you need a metal depression, first of all.
Yeah.
I think like a metal depression sounds like a sad robot that would appear like in a Radiohead song.
I think it sounds like, well, I was thinking more like hair metal.
Yeah, no, you're right. As I was saying it, I have the same thing. Like what if like Motley Crue did a whole album of sad songs?
Called Metal Depression. Oh my God. Or like Metallica. Well, I feel like Metallica is a metal depression band.
Metallica is a metal depression. And they're also some kind of monster.
Okay, great.
Okay, so let's talk about the history of puffed rice cakes, which does not go back very far.
Should we eat rice cakes while we do this?
Sure. Like, you got some good stuff there. I did.
I think I got the same ones you did, only I only got three. Did you get four?
I got four, yeah. So I got, by the way, Molly and I are on camera for the first time in a while because, like, Molly had, like, shitty internet for a while and we were using some weird software that didn't have a camera. But now, like, we're back. We're back to 2020.
And we're so distracted, too.
We're so distracted. Like, Molly has, like, so much hair since last time.
I've grown a lot of hair.
than last time. And I'm holding up some rice cakes is the point I was making. So yeah, I've got the Quaker lightly salted. I got the Lundberg organic. I couldn't find the Quaker white cheddar, but I got the Simple Truth organic store brand white cheddar. You got the Quaker white cheddar.
I did.
So where should we start? Let's cheese plate this and then I'll go into the history while we crunch.
So wait, are the Quaker lightly salted? This seems to me that this should be like, this is the mild cheese on the cheese plate.
No question. This, right? I think it's going to be easy to cheese plate.
Okay, wait. You're right. This is made with brown rice too.
Oh, this is crumbling badly.
My God, my closet is going to be destroyed by this.
Something went wrong here at the plant.
Do you think something actually went wrong in the grocery handling?
I think something went wrong in the grocery handling. Yeah, actually. Now, come to think of it, like, I'm the one who put them in like, a cart and rolled them up the hill over many bumpy sidewalks.
Do you guys have, a grocery caddy?
Like, classic, like, granny cart. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so great.
Yeah, because we do grocery pickup, like, twice a week and bring it home in our cart.
I did grocery pickup yesterday to get these. I went to Central Market in Shoreline. And, wow, their, like, curbside pickup situation was really awesome.
Yeah, it's good. Like, I just got so many crumbs, but I laid a towel down on my bed in preparation for this episode, which I think may have saved my marriage. I think I might not have to do that Oprah interview now.
My rice cakes were well handled.
Okay.
If I may say so. Yeah. Wow, this is a really beautiful rice cake. I think I could spread peanut butter on either side of it.
That's interesting. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, these Quaker ones seem like the two sides seem much more similar than I remember.
You know what I'm noticing with this? So, the individual puffs of rice seem extremely thoroughly interwoven.
Yeah.
Like, such that I cannot, it's created sort of an overall, I want to say mushy, but crunchy texture. Do you know what I mean?
Right. I know what you mean.
I think we're going to find with the Lundberg Family Farms brand that the kernels are more distinguishable.
Yes. I am really surprised how different the Quaker and Lundberg rice cakes are. I thought they were going to be exactly the same.
This is riveting information. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the history of rice cakes. So
this is fine. I mean, I don't really want to keep eating it.
I don't think that the Quaker one is very good. I think it's undersalted and kind of mushy. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right, go on.
So some of this information comes from an article that we'll link to an eater called What Happened to Quaker Rice Cakes by Brenna Houck. The answer to what happened to Quaker rice cakes is, like, it's not like a fad diet food anymore, so they don't sell as many of them anymore, but they're still around. So here's a quote from the article. I can't remember the first time I held one, but I also can't remember a time before I did. Palm-sized discs, they're the same weight as styrofoam, with a scant sprinkle of flavor crystals, salt, or maybe cinnamon, dusting the top and coating the crevices between each grain of puffy rice. So, puffed rice predates industrialization and probably is something people have been doing since antiquity.
Really?
Yeah, because like you can like pop rice kind of like popcorn, like you know, just when it's roasted. Mm-hmm. Like if the rice is a little moist and you roast brown rice, like some of it will puff.
Mm-hmm.
People probably, you know, thousands of years ago figured that out and were like, oh, this is good. Like, I'm gonna like puff rice on purpose. But industrial puffed rice dates to like the beginning of the 20th century.
This is very logical, and also somehow I'm still surprised.
Yeah, it is attributed to a botanist named Alexander P. Anderson, who allegedly discovered it in 1901 and sold the process to Quaker in 1904.
This is, you phrased it here on the agenda as American industrial puffed rice is attributed to Alexander P. Anderson. But I was going to say, like, I wonder who the original creator of puffed rice is.
Like,
caveman?
Cave person, yeah.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to give credit where it's due, man.
The original Puff Daddy, if you
yes.
will.
Yes, okay.
Anderson, quote from Wikipedia, Anderson took a 4x36-inch gas pipe and sealed it with pipe heads on each end, one removable. He placed raw rice inside and rotated the cylinder while heating it. When a gauge showed what he felt was enough pressure, Anderson used a sledgehammer to knock loose the removable head. A shower of puffed rice burst from the device. After reading this, I was like, I want to see, like, how long before this guy died in a, you know, gender reveal party rice puffer accident. He didn't. He lived to, like, 84 or something. I cannot believe this guy survived these experiments. Like, there were so many things just in that one, like, 10-minute experiment that should have killed him. So Quaker used the process for various cereals and other products, sometimes advertising them as food shot from a gun.
What?
Yes. For example, there's a 1940s ad that I found. Here comes Quaker with a bang bang. Wheat shot from guns is the most tempting breakfast grain you ever ate.
Wait, is that real?
It's absolutely real. Here comes Quaker with a bang bang. Quaker, Quaker is going to shoot you in the face.
Oh my God. Wait a minute. Hold on though. I'm trying to figure this out. What we're talking about here is like the puffed grain. We're not talking about the wheat interweaving, like the popping
right.
and
so
interweaving.
I think like, you know, Honey Smacks?
Yes.
That's a puffed rice cereal. So like individual grains of puffed rice have been around since the early 20th century. Well, probably before that, but like produced like, you know, with industrial, you know, capacity and precision.
Okay. Wheat
can I eat,
shot
can I eat
from
this
guns.
Rice cake?
Yeah. Which one are you eating? Mm. Oh, boy.
It's the Lundberg.
Is it better?
It's way better, yeah.
Okay.
Rice cakes hit the market in the mid-80s and didn't really become huge until the late 80s, which is later than I would have guessed.
Okay. I have liberated my Lundberg lightly salted brown rice cake from
No, I its can see. Now that we're on camera, I can see you liberating your Lundberg.
One thing that I do want to say is that the Quaker packaging, I think, is a little bit better in that the stack of rice cakes is divided into two plastic sleeves.
Yeah.
Whereas the Lundberg is just in one sleeve. And if there's one thing that I don't want, it's a stale rice cake. So,
true. So
now
you got
I've
a
opened
double sleeve.
These, yeah, I got to eat this stuff fast now that I've opened it. Hold on.
Okay. Start. You can start now.
Oh, my God. This is so much better.
It's so much better. It's crispier. It's like more toasted somehow. It's got a little more salt, I think.
I would have thought if I opened this without tasting the Quaker, I would have thought it's just a little bit stale. But
no,
I'm
that's just what that's, rice cakes are like, I think.
Yeah, it's just the way that like the kernels kind of crackle between your teeth. And it's what I want, I think. That's what I want. I want that slightly stale texture as opposed to a mushy, crunchy texture.
Right. So, all right, yeah, we've learned a lot so far. So, like, you know, when you go like to pick up a bunch of rice cakes, as you probably do because this is 1989, go Lundberg, I guess. So, rice cakes hit the market in the mid to late 80s. Here's an article from Advertising Age in May 1986. Quote, Quaker Oats Company is now in a position to dominate the small, obscure rice cake market thanks to serious efforts in that area. Rice cake sales hit only $30 million in 1985, but that figure could double by the end of 1986 as grocery store distribution increases. Also spurring sales will be Quaker's $10 million investment in the national introduction of its rice cakes. Its rice cake line, acquired from Arden Organics in 1985, holds a 40% share of the market, but H.J. Heinz Company holds the remaining 60%.
Hold on, Matthew. I think we just lost all our listeners.
Yeah, I just realized this quote is way, way too long. Okay, let's cut to the punchline here.
Okay.
Food industry analysts believe the success of rice cakes will depend upon their taste.
Oh,
food
really?
Industry analysts, bold.
Wow.
And also, I don't think that's correct at all.
Do you think that the success of rice cakes depends upon their calorie content?
Yeah, I think so.
Are there other foods whose success depends upon? I mean, I guess like every diet food ever.
Yeah, like Snackwells. Remember Snackwells?
Oh my God. Do Snackwells still exist?
I don't know if they do. I'm going to guess probably they do, and they're down to like, you know, one cookie box in the cookie aisle. That's just a guess. But one thing that I thought was kind of interesting as I was reading up on this is that a lot of people writing about this seem to have forgotten that like low fat and low carb were two separate diet trends like many years apart and kind of collapsed them into one thing in their memory, which makes sense. But I'm old enough to remember that that's not what happened.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was definitely low fat in the beginning and low carb. Nobody thought about that.
Right. And so these like rice cakes are like symbolic, emblematic even of like the low fat diet era.
Right. Okay. How do you think these things entered your childhood household? Like, did Judy Amster buy these out of a moment of like diet?
Oh, yeah, I think so. That like these are a snack that's good for you.
Okay. Did you ever reach for them plain, or did you only eat them with peanut butter?
I definitely preferred them with peanut butter, but I think I would snack on them plain as a kid. Just pure convenience.
Interesting. I don't think June has ever had one of these, which seems right. I mean, now I think this is a very marginal, like a very sort of bygone era kind of product.
Like a teenager of the show December grabbed one the other day, like as a convenient snack, and ate half of it and was like, should I put this leftover rice cake half back in the bag? And we're like, no, that's not
how this
works.
Did they even put peanut butter on it, though?
No.
Okay, I was going to say, I think if they had put peanut butter on it, they might have
had
a different...
And then put it back in the bag?
No. But I mean, in terms of wanting to finish the whole thing, I think the teenager of the show December might have finished it.
If I like went for the rice cake bag and my child had put a half peanut buttered rice cake back in the bag, I'd be like, oh shit, my kid is going to be a serial killer. Like, yes. Like I blew it. There's nothing I can do. Like,
yes.
Not that it's my fault if my kid becomes a serial killer, but still, that would be upsetting.
I love how we've turned this into a sociology podcast where we're going to get to the bottom of like the signs that your kid is going to be a serial killer and whose fault it is.
I think we just like answered those questions. The number one sign is putting back a peanut buttered rice cake. And no, it's not your fault. This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, you go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider,
and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.
Matthew, is Quaker still the leading brand for rice cakes?
Yeah, Quaker, I think, is still the leading brand for rice cakes, and they make all of their rice cakes at a factory in Columbia, Missouri.
Huh, okay. How long did these, did this product, like, have its heyday?
So, by 1995, they were still, like, a huge snack. Which, again, this whole thing happened, like, later than I remembered. Like, I would have guessed that, like, rice cakes were already big by 1982. No. Not so.
So really 1985 to 95.
Yeah. And then by the late 90s, like, people had started to move on to other things. And the low carb fad really hit around 2003 and like sales really dropped off. And so they came back with snack size rice cakes marketed in like chip bags. And I got a couple of those. And those seem to be now more widely available than like the classic hockey puck ones, because it used to be. I remember, like, in my, like, adult grocery shopping lifetime, there would be, like, a whole rice cake section with the tall bags, just, like, dozens of different varieties and brands. And now, like, that's mostly migrated over to, like, the healthy chip section.
I'm fascinated by the thought of, like, chip-sized rice cakes, because for me, the entire reason for eating a rice cake... Okay, hold on, Matthew. Hold your horses. The entire reason for eating a rice cake is to put peanut butter on it, to, like, get peanut butter from the jar to your mouth.
I think, like, people want more convenient snacks than that these days, though.
But, like, are they using these? Are they dipping these things? Are they... What do you do? Are these all flavored?
The ones in bags, I think, are mostly, if not all, flavored. And, like, I'm like an on-the-go business person. Like, I don't have time to stop and spread peanut butter on things the way I used to. Like, I mean, I have people for that, of course. But like, I need a portable snack that's going to satisfy me with a crunchy texture and some sort of flavor powder. And that's why I bought Simple Truth Organic Creamy Ranch with Other Natural Flavors mini rice cakes made with rice and corn.
Okay, talk for a minute about these while I open up my Quaker white cheddar full-size rice cakes.
Okay, I think these are very good. Like, I've been snacking the shit out of these.
How would you compare them to, like, a potato, like a pop chip type thing?
I think they're better because the pop chips have like sort of like an artificial potato flavor to them and these like really work for me all around. But like the reason these are good is because like they put on tons of ranch powder, and it's a good ranch powder with like lots of salt and lots of buttermilk powder, which I think are the key things.
All right. Now I'm eating a Quaker rice cake, the white cheddar kind. I noticed that it is kind of freckled. I don't know if you can see that there are like yellow splotches in it.
Yeah, I can see the splotches.
I'm kind of like as though it's like got butter buds in it or something. But hang on, I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. Doesn't really taste like white cheddar, but it tastes good in that like powdery dairy facsimile kind of way.
Yeah, I do remember having the white cheddar ones before. And I think I got the chip style white cheddar ones, the store brand Simple Truth Organic.
You know, this reminds me of Pirate's Booty. This is like the flavor of Pirate's Booty in the shape of a cake.
Yeah, I think Pirate's Booty probably also like cannibalized part of the rice cake market.
Good point. Oh, this is tasty. I like this. Interesting. Matthew, wait a minute. Can we pause on the rice cakes for just a second and return to last week's pop chips? So we record on Monday mornings, generally.
Yeah.
I'm telling you this because the listener already knows, obviously.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is your hint. Like, you know, don't forget next week's taping.
No.
This is the first time I've showed up in 6 weeks.
So we usually record on Monday mornings. Monday evenings, I teach a class on Zoom. And I usually, like, when my class takes a little break midway through, I usually go get myself a little bowl of chips to quickly inhale on our break or whatever.
Of course.
So last Monday, after eating pop chips with you in the morning, that evening I got myself a bowl of pop chips. And I was like, I'm going to see how this feels to have as like a legit snack. And I couldn't even finish the bowl. And we're talking like a little bowl, okay? I was just like, what? I wound up dumping them all in the yard waste container.
Yeah, we like How did we do on the pop chips? We ate neither none nor all of them. Neither none nor
the
all.
The only thing I've saved are the Lay's poppables, the ones that are like,
I ate quite a few chips. Of the white cheddar popcorners. I thought those were pretty good, but then I didn't finish the bag. Like, when have I ever not finished a bag of chips? You're right. Yeah. They're not very good.
Yeah, it was weird. It also just felt so processed, and I'm aware that that is like my my snobby mind. Yeah. But still. Anyway, there's my pop chips update.
When you said you wanted to see if they were a legit snack, that there's an episode of The Good Place where Eleanor Shellstrop, played by Kristen Bell, describes herself as a legit snack, which is very funny.
That's delightful.
Okay, what else do we need to know? Oh, last thing, perhaps, about rice cakes is Quaker and Lundberg have made dozens of rice cake flavors, and I started to make a quiz, but, like, my wacky ones really stuck out too much. But here's a few that that are available or were. Coconut Sprinkle, which is part of the Lundberg Thin Stackers series.
Mm.
Butter Popcorn. Not buttered popcorn, but butter popcorn.
Okay.
Tamari with seaweed, which I misspelled on the agenda as Tamari with Sea Week, which is like Shark Week. Cinnamon Toast and everything.
Wow,
not everything bagel, but just everything. Yeah.
I wonder what kind of stuff they cram into the rice cake, the everything one.
Wife of the show, Lori, and I went to did a quick Trader Joe's run yesterday. And we were talking on the way back about Trader Joe's, how many different trail mixes they sell, that I was speculating, not having gone into the store, that maybe, like, due to pandemic supply chain issues, they haven't been able to sell all of their regular. Wow. The setup for this joke is taking way too long. I can hear it too. Anyway, the joke was that they were just going to make one trail mix at any given time based on like which trail mix components they had available in the category and just call it like, this is the shit you get trail mix. So it's going to be like a piece of peanut brittle and like three of those caramel chips that no one really likes and like two different kinds of peanuts.
That was a really good story.
It was a great story, yeah. Let me tell you some other things we talked about on the way back from Trader Joe's.
Your typo where you turned seaweed into Sea Week reminds me, have you watched The Octopus Teacher?
What's that?
It's on Netflix. Matthew, I'm like the last person to watch this. No, actually, you're the last person to watch this. So it's on Netflix, and I've only watched half of it because it was my kid's bedtime.
Is this like a thing with like tentacle sex?
No, there's no, okay. I haven't gotten to any sex part yet.
Because I feel like if I wanted to write like an erotic octopus story, I would call it My Octopus Teacher. I mean, I'm not saying I want to write an erotic octopus story. I'm saying I need to write an erotic octopus story. Please continue.
I can't wait to read it. Please send me the Google Doc when you're ready for editing.
What do you think of the title Eroctopus? Never mind.
Anyway, yeah, I was just going to say it's like a tender, loving Shark Week is my octopus teacher. No, but really, it's quite delightful. If you are someone who loves nature documentaries, if you need something that feels good, I mean, that's not Eroctopus.
Mm-hmm.
Not feels good that way.
It doesn't feel that good, but it feels pretty good.
Feels pretty good. Yeah, a number of my students had told me to watch My Octopus Teacher. I think they, you know, obviously they think of me as their octopus teacher.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. But anyway, it's really good, Matthew, and I couldn't pass up the opportunity to link it to your typo of Sea Week.
No, that totally makes sense. Do they think of you as their octopus teacher because you turned on an octopus Zoom filter and couldn't figure out how to turn it off?
No.
Okay. So that's a great segue to our most popular segment, Cute Animals You Need to Know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
by
that.
By the way, there's no mail this week. So for spilled mail, just like someone send us an email, contact@spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Send us something.
Yeah.
Okay, cute animals.
So since giant otters were so polarizing, I am curious to see what people think of other giant animals. And so this week I give you Coco Puff, a Flemish giant rabbit. Mm-hmm. And this is a domesticated rabbit, and it's the largest domesticated rabbit. It's like the size of a medium-sized dog, I guess. Maybe like a small-ish dog.
I'm looking at the video that you linked to of Coco Puff, the Flemish giant rabbit, with its human children who it hangs out with. I want this rabbit.
Oh, yeah. This rabbit is a delight. The females have a pronounced dewlap, which is like the flap of fat under the chin, which is adorable. And you can like rub it and scratch it. And yeah,
I was just thinking about how much you really leaned into rubbing and scratching the dew flap.
Yeah, it's a dewlap. But yes.
Go on.
The thing I've been noticing, like as I get into more and as YouTube has realized that like everyone else in the world, the thing I want to watch is cute animal videos. Like when the gist is like, this is the cute animal that is also our pet, and we're appearing in like a 3-minute segment about like us and our giant rabbit or other weird pet. There's this underlying tone of like the family is trying to pretend that they're normal.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy very much. Like, uh-huh. You know, we're just like you. We just have our pet. It just happens to be like an 80-pound rabbit. And like, but you can tell that they're not really normal. And I don't mean that like in a judgmental way. I just think like the tightrope they're trying to walk there is very entertaining.
I love this. The whole time you've been talking, I'm still watching the Coco Puff video because it goes on and on and on and on.
Oh yeah. It's great.
Oh, my
God. So
we'll
link to that in the show notes, which you can find in your podcast player. Yes, Molly,
I have one thing
there
to say. So the Flemish giant rabbit was suggested by listener Casey. Thank you, listener Casey.
Thank you, listener Casey.
Listener Casey has a rabbit that is, I believe, half Flemish giant. So let's all go visit listener Casey.
Yeah, okay. Listener Casey, we'll be there shortly.
Okay.
The CDC released new guidance today that says we can come to your house and pet your rabbit.
Okay. Yeah, rabbits don't transfer COVID. Nope.
That's right. So this will be fine.
June and I saw a billboard the other day that was a very large photo of a man and a dog, and they were like snuggling, and the words on the billboard were something like, dogs can't spread COVID or something like that.
Do we know that for sure?
Well, June was like, what do they mean dogs can't spread COVID? And I was like, well, in theory, the virus could like live on their coat for a little while if you like coughed on them.
But you shouldn't cough on your dog.
But you shouldn't
cough on your dog.
Even I
know that, and I don't have a dog.
Well, what if I coughed on my hand, then I pet somebody else's dog and left my COVID germs on their dog, and then they pet the dog and then licked their hand? I mean, I think dogs can transfer COVID.
Yeah, so you really debunked that billboard.
Anyway, so there you go. That was my story.
All right. So I have important news about the quilting segment, which is that I know we stopped doing the quilting segment like 3-4 weeks ago, but okay. I came up with a name for it. So Abby, can you go back and edit this back into every episode? No, not really. But the name of the quilting segment should have been Calling It Quilts.
God, that's great. And so what it's about is like whether or not I should machine wash my new quilt, right?
Right, because people have very strong opinions on this in the sense that we've gotten no less than 2 emails, one from someone saying, do not machine wash the quilt, and another person saying to machine wash the quilt on Gentle Cycle. I think this rift is going to split our audience. I don't think we're going to come back from this. What do they call it like in a religion when like it breaks into 2 religions? I know there's a good word for this.
A schism.
Schism. Thank you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I have a little bit of an update on Calling It Quilts.
Oh, great.
Right now, so I've been sleeping with my quilt on top of our comforter.
Oh, I've been sleeping with an octopus.
Anyway, how erotic. I tried.
Thank
anyway,
you. I really appreciate that.
But during the day when I am not in the bed, and when the bed is made, I sound like
a robot that just learned English.
When I am not in the bed. No, I fold up the quilt and like put it somewhere where the dog can't lie on it.
Mm-hmm. That makes
sense. Because I still haven't washed it. And I'm trying to keep it clean as long as possible so that I can, you know, not either destroy or not destroy my quilt, depending upon which side of the schism you're on. Anyway, what I wanted to say is that today when I was setting up the studio in my closet, I grabbed my folded up quilt, and that is what I've used as some soundproofing in the studio today.
Wow. So we're hearing you're hearing the quilt right now.
You are.
I like it.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay.
You know what's going on in my house? Like this is about a cute animal, but it's also kind of sad. Like Mimi the cat has had to wear a cone for several weeks and just got the cone off and is doing okay. But the thing is that I didn't realize is that it's winter time. I did realize that. That's the time when cats like grow the most fur and shed the most. And if a cat can't groom its own fur because it's wearing a cone, it will leave like huge balls of tufts and sheets of fur on every surface.
Oh my God.
And this is a short-haired cat.
So between what your cat is doing and what you're doing with the rice cakes, your house is a disaster right now.
It's a disaster right now, but the thing is, I've gotten really into during pandemic is enjoying the process of emptying out the dust thingy on the vacuum. And so I'm really looking forward to like this week's vacuum.
This is super exciting.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we should do a segment about vacuuming.
Okay. How about Now But Wow, our segment now where we talk about stuff we're into this week.
Can I go first this time?
Sure. Yeah, you go
first.
All
right. So I've been listening to the Food Truck Scholar podcast hosted by Ariel Smith, and it is really a podcast for food truck operators. So it talks about operators themselves and like food truck historians, regulators, like sometimes people who like to eat at food trucks, but like everyone involved in the food truck industry. But like if you love food trucks and you miss food trucks, like this is a wonderfully produced show. Ariel Smith is a great host, gets really cool guests. And like I am learning so much about food trucks that I just never really thought about before. So it's a real like behind the scenes look.
I love the phrase that you wrote on the agenda. This is a podcast for food truck operators. This is what I love about the world of podcasting.
Yes.
That there is truly room for every kind of podcast.
Yeah, that's true. So no, but I genuinely recommend this show. Like if you like food trucks, I think you are going to enjoy this show.
Matthew, I have to tell you. So I had a different Now But Wow that I was going to do this morning. And as I was like washing my face, I realized, so last week in Now But Wow, I talked about how excited I was that finally my hold through the library had just come, like it was my turn to read The Book of Delights by Ross Gay. Remember I mentioned this last week?
I do remember that.
And how excited and I was. Have you gotten it yet?
I've not gotten it yet. I think it says estimated time like 9 weeks.
Okay, so now you see why I was excited, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I'm now like halfway through it. And I was going to talk about something else this morning, but I realized while I was washing my face that last night I dreamed like thinking about that book. So I just had to share that this book is so good that like it's showing up like in my dreams. Like I'm unpacking it in my dreams. So if you, listener, have not already put a hold on Ross Gay's The Book of Delights through your library, well, either buy a copy or get on hold.
Yeah, you could also like buy the book.
You could also buy the book. I mean, the truth is I'm going to go out and buy the book now. Yeah. So sorry, I'm doing 2 weeks in a row of Ross Gay, The Book of Delights.
No, that's totally legit. That's a legit snack. In the dream, like were you dreaming about the book as like a physical object or like something that happened in like that he wrote about in the book?
I was like analyzing it like I was doing a close reading of it as I was dreaming. Like, and it wasn't that I was dreaming about doing a close reading of it. It was like in my dreams, I was unpacking the book and specifically like his writing style.
That is super nerdy.
It's so nerdy. But anyway, I just had to share because, I mean, now, but wow, what a nerd am I.
Yeah.
Anyway, the book is great.
For your next dream, I recommend Sexy Octopus Dreams.
You mean Octopus Dreams.
Your Octopus Dreams.
Okay.
No, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you like going on that Iroctopus journey with me and trying to like make that word a thing for a few minutes, because as soon as I said it, I was like, I wish I could take that back. But no, you okay. That was so affirming.
That's what I am. I am here to affirm you sometimes.
Yeah, and I don't mean like take it back because there's anything wrong with like erotic octopus content. Just like it's so many consonants.
It's true.
All right. You can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com and on Reddit at reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk. You can send us an email for Spilled Mail, our sometimes segment, contact@spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
Our producer is Abby Circatella, who is our octopus teacher.
Yep. And thank you, as always, for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that...
That is a podcast for food operators.
Operator, can I have a food podcast?
Operator, can I have a food?
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Octopus Man.
Hang on. Okay. Mine, sorry, I know my sound quality is really bad because I'm far away from my mic. Picking it up again.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.